Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Did you miss us? Backsportspage.com is down, but Blog Talk Radio is up and rolling. Sean and Seth and Sean back for me. 1 week, my first hiatus in well over a year. It was rough down in Cancun, but someone had to do it. Have you sufficiently recovered, Sean?
Well, not really. I still do not have a voice, which for many of our listeners is probably a good thing. And for Seth is an extraordinary thing.
I am absolutely ecstatic about that.
Yeah, it was a rough couple of days, I have to say. By day six, I think we were both probably ready to go. A whole lot of beach volleyball, a whole lot of alcoholic beverages, and a whole lot of fun. I mean, if you have the chance to get down to Cancun, I'd highly recommend it. There are very few places where I look out and say, this could be heaven. That was one of them. So,
I know.
Definitely go with it. It's not Iowa. It's heaven. Anyway.
Very nice. Because we all need a Field of Dreams reference from time to time. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was an interesting time. Some alky, some drinky, some volleyball, some other things. Didn't miss too much. The San Antonio series went a little bit quicker than we anticipated. San Antonio sweeping Memphis in four. Memphis obviously a player away from really being... So I'm shocked. I thought it was going to be a very... I thought both series were going to be nip and tuck. I did not see a sweep. I did see Miami in seven, so one out of two isn't bad. I couldn't understand why people were saying Miami in four, Miami in five. I don't know. Anyone who watched Indiana... who looked at that team and said, man, that is a bad matchup for Miami. And it was.
Well, that's what Roy Hibbert said after game six. Now, he didn't say it very eloquently, but he definitely said it, and he got fined $75,000 for it. But he did say, you know what, you guys really haven't watched us all year, so now you're watching us and you're seeing how good we are. Again, I will make the claim that Roy Hibbert is the best center in basketball. Defensively, he's by far the best center in basketball. I really think he anchors that defense as well as any center in basketball. I think he is reliable. I think he played in 81 out of the 82 games this year. He averaged 18 points, 8 rebounds, and more importantly than a Dwight Howard or a Marc Gasol, he basically sets up that entire defense. When he's not in there, as we saw last night, when Frank Vogel perplexingly put him and Paul George on the bench for a good amount of time, the defense is just not there. I mean, he is that good at being an intimidator. I mean, he's in the same realm as a Tyson Chandler, except he's got an offensive game too.
No, I'm still not willing to anoint him as the best center in basketball, but he certainly was fantastic in this playoff series, as was Paul George. And it took Miami, you know, they were the better team for most of the seven-game series. Unfortunately for them and their fans, they weren't good enough at the end. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with David West, who is the heart and soul of that team as a free agent. Danny Granger coming back, who is a very similar player to a Paul George, although not the two-way player that George is. Can you trade Granger? I'm not really sure. Do they need, you know, is George Hill going to win you a championship at point guard? I don't know. But they do have a lot of the pieces in place, and they will be dangerous for several years going forward.
Well, if nothing else, looking forward for them, you're absolutely right. They will be dangerous. And part of why they will be dangerous is and this is where I guess the capologist in me comes in, is cap-wise, they are very well off. I mean, they do have a max player but in Roy Hibbert, but the max is a four-year max, and it's for $15 or $16 million. It's not in that $20 million range. Not all max contracts are made the same. If you remember last year, Roy Hibbert had to thank the Portland Trailblazers for supposedly offering him a max contract, which Indiana rightfully and absolutely positively did match. And here we are with a center. They have George Hill, who's on a five-year, $40 million contract, $8 million a year. When Ron Artest is earning $40 million, $8 million a year, and so is George Hill, you kind of say that that's worth it in NBA spectrum. Paul George has one more year left on his rookie contract. He's eligible for an extension this year. He probably will get a max contract. And then you're right. It comes down to what they're going to pay David West. Because with Granger coming off the cap next year at $14 million, do they look to trade Danny Granger even for a pile of bricks from teams such as New Orleans or Charlotte that have that cap room? Or do they keep him for one more year and let go of David West? Because if you're going to re-up all these guys, Lance Stephenson's on a rookie contract. The rest of them are on rookie contracts. I mean, they are in a great cap situation.
I don't think George Hill is. I believe George Hill signed a four-year, $40 million contract before this year.
No, that's what I said. He signed a five-year, $40 million contract, so $8 million a year. So when him and Ron Artest are on the same concept
okay.
of money-wise.
My fault.
They definitely make out. And Stevenson's on a rookie contract. I mean, they have a lot of guys that are still on those rookie contracts.
Well, it also explains the weakness that they have in their bench when you have all these people on their rookie contracts.
Absolutely. And the question is, when they bring back Granger, what does he do? Does he solve that bench problem? And if he does, this team is incredibly dangerous next year.
Yes. And it does lead into the obvious question of, you know, we have what most people think is going to be a pretty fascinating final. I actually kind of disagree. I think it's best for the NBA. I think Indiana-San Antonio would have been the worst rating since 03, which was Detroit-San Antonio. May have even been worse. You know, San Antonio has become a surprisingly entertaining team to watch over the years as it's gone from a Tim Duncan-led team to a Tony Parker-led team. People were saying, you know, what are the best matchups for Miami? What are the worst matchups for Miami? Of Indiana, Memphis, and San Antonio, San Antonio is probably the best matchup for Miami. They don't have the height. They don't have the girth. They are going to run a little bit more than either of those other teams do, surprisingly. I think it's a good matchup. Tim Duncan is not as great a player as Duncan is. He is not the post-up guy that Randolph is at this point in his career, and he's not 7'2 like Hibbert. So I think, you know, Birdman and Anderson and Bosch will be able to limit him at least to a point. I like Miami in six to win back-to-back championships.
Well, I like Miami in five, so I think we're on the same plane as far as this is concerned. I think you're absolutely right, because the one thing that San Antonio does not have is Paul George. They don't have a guy that can defend LeBron James. One-on-one, Indiana went one-on-one the entire series. They never double-teamed LeBron. They said to Paul George, you got him. Go get him. And he did. He averaged 23 points a game. So, I mean.
That's it? I would have assumed he averaged more than that.
I think it was about 23 a game. Maybe even if it's more. He certainly didn't have the 40 points that he normally does, and he wasn't able to dominate the same way he normally does until last night. But last night, everything was clicking for Miami. I mean, everything was clicking. Dwayne Wade looked like he had turned back the clock at least 4 or 5 years the way he was playing, and Bosch was hitting three-pointers. I still think that there's no way that can stop LeBron. LeBron takes another MVP, and you're right, they do win, but they win in five, and they win on their home court.
Their home court, no, it's 2-3-2.
Oh, then you are correct, in six.
Thank you.
I will agree. I thought it was 2-2-1-1-1. So we have our NBA Finals, and that's the end of that. So another sport, perhaps, is gone. Well, probably by next week we won't be talking about this anymore if they're down in six, right? So we start Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. No, we'll still be talking about it.
We will.
Game five. And then we got free agency with the lovely Dwight Howard saga again. And as we noted in as we found in Cancun, or at least we learned in Cancun, Dwight Howard is now soliciting offers for various teams and is not necessarily going to go back to the Lakers.
Who cares?
Drama queen.
Who cares?
Who cares? All right.
Well, unless he's going to call and talk to us, 760-283-0846, I just don't care.
That may happen. You never know. I mean, with our connections out there, Dwight Howard, yeah, that would be a nice poll. I mean, we've gotten people before.
That is true, although I don't remember us ever getting Dwight Howard. Two other big notes over the last 48 hours in the NBA. The last two players from the 1994 NBA draft retired. Jason Kidd, Hall of Famer. Grant Hill, in probably Hall of Famer. But let's hear, what are your thoughts on Grant Hill as a Hall of Famer?
Oh, there's no doubt Grant Hill's a Hall of Famer to me. Because remember, the Basketball Hall of Fame has
right.
to do with college, too.
Agreed.
And
that's why, in my mind, there's no question.
Yeah, there's no question. Grant Hill threw the pass of the greatest shot ever. And to me, or ever in NCAA basketball history, the Leitner shot. People don't remember how amazing that pass was, let alone the shot. I mean, he threw a three-quarters court on a dime, right to Leitner. There's no doubt that, to me, Grant Hill is a Hall of Famer. He was well on his way to being just an NBA Hall of Famer before the injuries.
Well, that's the shame of it. And, yes, the more even more impressive to me than Grant Hill winning the two championships was Grant Hill his senior year leading a very, very mediocre Duke team to the championship game where they with pretty much no back, beating Glenn Robinson in the round of eight and losing to Arkansas in the last minute on Scotty Thurman's three-pointer. That team was led by Chris Collins and Jeff Capel, who were freshmen, Antonio Lang. Grant Hill was Mr. Everything. Grant Hill was Magic Johnson for that team, and except a better score. And Grant Hill was probably the best all-around forward in basketball before his injuries. And it is a shame. While I agree with Sean that he will end up a Hall of Famer, you know, in that pantheon of greats, and we know how I feel about Hall of Fames. He really was could have been one of true all-time greats.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that you look back and say, what if? I mean, there's no question. He's in the same realm as a Bill Walton. He's in the same realm to me, and believe it or not, I know you're gonna laugh. He's in the same realm as Sam Bowie. I really think Sam Bowie. I'm looking at the face on Seth right now, or a Pete Reiser. If you're going to a different...
Going back to a 40s baseball player?
40s, 50s, Mickey Mantle before he hurt himself, who was a great player, but what could he have been even more so? These are players that... And I include Bowie, because Bowie, if you look at him in college, before all those injuries, and he started having injuries in college, was a dominating center. He just got hurt.
But the difference being Bill Walton was the best player in basketball for 2 years. Mickey Mantle won three MVPs. Pete Reiser, I believe, won a batting crown.
He did.
Look at me with my baseball, my mad baseball National League knowledge. These guys had accomplished something in the pros. Bowie never, you know, by hook of, you know, whether he could have or not, who knows? But there was he never accomplished anything in the NBA.
All right, so he's Hank Gathers? For all intents and purposes?
Well, he was better than being dead.
No. I'm saying what could have been. It's more of a concept of, all right, so something happened. Okay, I get what you're
saying. Sean's a little flustered after my death comment.
Yeah, the death kind of took me to a different place. But anyway, that being said, he definitely is more of those what-ifs. And he was the best forward, and what Orlando tried to do was actually pit the best forward with what they thought was the best guard.
And Tracy McGrady.
The shooting guard in Tracy McGrady, and even tried to couple them with Tim Duncan. And at that point, that was the only time that I believe Duncan was really wondering whether he was going to stay in San Antonio and how the NBA history would have been altered had Tim Duncan moved to San Antonio. You can't tell. It's one of those 30 for 30s as to what would have happened if. Or you can't blame X if this. So, great career, but I think we have to touch upon Jason Kidd as well, who may be I like to say that Jason Kidd turned his career into something that it wasn't early, as good as anybody else I've ever seen. He was a non-shooting entity when he first came in. In fact, he was one of the worst shooting guards and worst free throw shooters in the NBA when he first came in, because I had him on my fantasy league team and it was horrendous. Having him for rebounds and assists was fantastic, but shooting percentage, not Jason Kidd. And in the last 5 years, he's become a spot-up shooter better than most players. I won't say anybody because you still have Ray Allen. But better than most players in the NBA, he turned his career totally around, became a defensive stalwart, and became a shooter.
Well, the question will go down with Kidd is where does he fit in this era, this point guard era of, you know, when I think of there are so many great, very good to great point guards since he came in 94. And I'm kind of curious to hear your view is who you would take him above during this era. Kidd or Stockton?
Where does the era start and where does
I'm starting with where he started.
Okay.
So
you're ending it today.
And just till today. So would you the prime of each player, not the, you know, Kidd of 94 versus John Stockton of 94, but the Kidd of 2000. Would you rather have had Kidd and Stockton?
Well, I guess that's my question because Stockton is before 94. So
no, but he also went to 2000.
Right. So you're saying anybody that was active in 1994.
Right.
Okay. Would I take Stockton or Kidd? I'd take Kidd.
As would I.
I think Stockton was perfect for what he was doing, but I don't
think... He was a great system point guard.
I think if you put him on any other team, he's the... who's the guy that played at North Carolina State? Chris something.
Corciani.
He's the Chris Corciani of the NBA.
That's a long fall. But I think...
But Corciani was a perfect system point guard for North Carolina State.
Corciani and Rodney Monroe. Wow. Okay, you getting ready for the ACC.
Yeah, all right. So would I take Tony Parker? Would you take Tony Parker in his prime or Jason Kidd? Yeah, you see?
Tony Parker. Simply because I think he's much easier to deal with. I think Jason Kidd, you know, was a head case. And he met, you know, there were issues with him in Phoenix, issues with him in Dallas, issues with him in New Jersey. Tony Parker is in his prime right now. I think the more interesting is actually Kidd's idol, Gary Payton. That is a tough. I think I would go with Payton because I think Payton is a better defensive player.
Oh, there's no doubt I go with Gary Payton.
Yeah.
Gary Payton was a better scorer.
Yeah.
He was a better defensive player.
Yes.
Better rebounder.
Payton.
The only thing he wasn't better at was passing.
Right. Because he was kind of a weird combo. It wasn't a combo. He was a point guard, but it was a strange. He was kind of a combo guard before combo guards became.
So that's 3 out of 4. And he was a better shooter.
Yes, he was.
So I take him.
Well, would you take Parker or?
I take Kidd. And the reason I take Kidd is because while Parker has done all this, Parker's done it with Tim Duncan leading the team or Manu Ginobili leading the team. And that's no fault of Tony Parker. But Jason Kidd turned around the New Jersey Nets.
Yes, he did.
Pretty much by himself. The team was the same. And here comes Jason Kidd saying we're going to get 40 wins on a 26-win team, and 50 wins comes out with the same team. I'm not sure you put Tony Parker on that team.
The greatest accomplishment Jason Kidd ever had, was leading a mediocre, and as someone who rooted for the Nets in 2001 and 2002, they were what they were, a mediocre New Jersey Nets team. And yes, admittedly a weakened Eastern Conference. To back-to-back Eastern Conference championships.
And almost a third. They lost to the Pistons. I mean, almost a third there.
Yeah, but I think that was in the semis. I don't think that was in the finals.
No, you're right. It was in the semis. But, I mean, they were just as good as the Pistons that year, too. I mean, if not for Chauncey Billups, they probably would have been in a third. I mean, he dominated those series.
Yeah, and what I remember, actually, is the team they played, the Laker team that they played, they got annihilated by. But they played the Spurs very tough, losing in a very close sixth game where Duncan went for 21, 29, 9-8. Can you imagine having a quadruple double in an NBA final? And Kenyon Martin, who had talked all the trash, went 3-21. And that way they lost by, I think, 6 in a really good game. Actually, that was the day before I moved back to New York.
And that's why I would take Jason Kidd over Tony Parker. And that's not to fault Parker at all because he hasn't been given that opportunity. And quite frankly, he may never be given that opportunity because Duncan may last another 4 or 5 years. You don't know.
I mean, I think Duncan is going to play another 2 years. I think Ginobili plays another 2 years. In 2 to 3 years, Tony Parker may be out of his prime.
Yeah,
he'll be 34 by that point. Interesting about Rajon Rondo.
Oh, there's no question I take Kidd. Right? Because, A, I'm not sure Rondo's hit his peak. That's number one. Number two, Rajon Rondo hasn't done anything. to me. He's not done it. Rajon Rondo's a worse shooter than Jason Kidd.
Yes.
That's very hard to do when Jason Kidd
better
is
athlete,
young.
Better athlete, better defender.
Yep.
Not as great passer when he wants to be, but he doesn't want to be as often as Kidd.
I read something interesting in Ian O'Connor on ESPN today.
You were reading ESPN today? I'm stunned.
You know, I had an hour free, and it really was only an hour free today. So I was reading this on ESPN where at the beginning of every game, or most games, when Jason Kidd was playing with Kenny Martin, and I don't remember who else was on that team, but there was another high flyer on that team, Vince Carter. He would throw alley-oops early in the game, probably like the first two or three trips down the court, so far out of Kenny Martin's reach, and he'd do it on purpose because he wanted Kenny Martin to run a little faster throughout the rest of the game. And Lawrence Frank would throw up his hands and goes, and expletive, expletive, expletive. And then he realized what he was doing because in the fourth quarter, Kenny Martin would run faster. And so Jason Kidd was pretty much the coach on the floor. Rajon Rondo's not the coach on the floor. Now, granted, he hasn't been given that opportunity either, but the coach on that floor is Kevin Garnett, and the assistant is Paul Pierce. And then you had Ray Allen. You didn't need Rajon Rondo to do that, and I'm not sure he's mature enough to do that. So I would definitely take him. Now, I think I know your answer on this, but Chauncey Billups, you would take Jason Kidd, right? No question? How about Magic?
Magic's the second greatest player I've ever seen. It's not even a discussion.
Okay. So other contemporaries. Are there any other contemporaries?
Darren Williams?
Oh, I'd take Kidd.
That's what I...
There's no question in my mind. Other than that, you know, it's funny. I think the Jason Kidd-like, and I say this with the greatest amount of respect for him, is Mark Jackson. Because I think Mark Jackson did everything Jason Kidd did, just a little bit less. He rebounded, he passed, he led the league in assists a couple of times, he played good defense on those Indiana teams. I don't think Mark Jackson was ever given the credit that he probably deserved. And in my head just popped another contemporary, although it just left. Hold on. Oh, here's one. How about Tim Hardaway?
That was the other name I was thinking about. I would probably take Kidd. I think for what Kidd did, he was better at it than what Hardaway was a better scorer. Kidd was a better leader, better passer, better defender. Although I did love Hardaway watching the UTEP two-step. You know, as I said, it really has been a golden generation of point guards over the last 15, 20 years. And Kidd was at the forefront of it.
Yeah, I think Jason Kidd started the whole rebounds, guards can rebound, point guards can rebound. He has the most triple-doubles in history with over 105. I think it's 109, but he has the most triple-doubles in history. And before him, and I guess Gary Payton's around the same time, guards just didn't rebound at all. And Kidd, I think, averaged 5 or 6 rebounds a game some years, and that's incredible for a point guard. But like I said, I think one of the more incredible things about Jason Kidd is later on in his career, he totally adjusted his game. And there aren't many players that will totally adjust their game to keep playing. And what he did with the Knicks this year, or even with the Mavericks 2 years ago in winning the championship, was an incredible display of selflessness in the fact that we all thought that Jason Kidd was a selfish player when he first came up. In fact, with the 3 J's, which unfortunately became the no J's, well, Mashburn for a while. But if you recall, when he first came up, his teammates were Jimmy Jackson and Jamal Mashburn. I mean, that's a pretty lethal trifecta. Unfortunately, none of the three of them could live with each other. And that's unfortunate because those three guys, I mean, Jamal Mashburn was a 20-point scorer, Jason Kidd is what he was, and Jimmy Jackson was a great third. They were a pretty good trifecta. They could have won a lot more games than they did. And unfortunately, all three of them were pretty much babies about it.
Well, they were all fighting over Tony Braxton. So we've all done a lot more for a lot less.
Touche. Touche. All right. So what else have we come up on in the NBA that we haven't talked about?
No, we can talk coaching jobs, or we can wait on that till next week. Do you want to touch on hockey?
We should probably touch on hockey, considering they're in the semifinals and Pittsburgh
is in big trouble.
Yeah, not only are they in big trouble, but they need a goalie. Like they went, they should have been down to their third goalie last night. That was incredible display by the Boston Bruins.
Winning 6-1 on the road, outscoring Pittsburgh 10-1, I believe, in the first two games of the series. Is this series over?
I hate the Bruins. I hate the Bruins.
I'm not sure that answers the question.
No, I know. I think that the Bruins are going to win this series. I think that Pittsburgh will pull out a game or two. But, yeah, I think A, the series is probably over, and B, Marc-Andre Fleury may have played his last game in Pittsburgh.
Was Fleury playing last night, or was Thomas? Was it Vakun?
Both of them played.
Who?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Fleury has worn out his welcome. I think when the Islanders did what they did, it basically showed that with a better goalie, they could be good or much, much better. Be a Stanley Cup winning team, even though they won one with Fleury. Yeah, it's a. I just heard a honking horn.
That was my phone beeping. You can continue.
Oh. Seth has messages. You have
mail. I have mail.
So, yeah, I think that'll be an interesting offseason for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The offense is there. Jerome Iginla is a free agent after this year. So it'll just be an interesting offseason to see what they can do. I do write them off. I think this is the end of them. Going to the West with the Kings and the Blackhawks, another tough series. I picked the Blackhawks in the finals, and I believe you picked the Kings in the finals.
No, I took the Blackhawks.
Oh, I took the Kings.
Yes, I took the Blackhawks.
I took the Kings. All right, fair enough.
Woo-hoo!
So each have... So I don't have my finals in the East because I definitely picked the Rangers. And you picked Pittsburgh.
Yes, my final was Pittsburgh-Chicago.
And mine was LA-New York.
Well, I know I do no worse than a draw.
That is true, no question about it. I mean, right now, it's funny because it should be one of the more exciting times in sports. Being that we have the finals coming up on both the NBA and in the NHL. And it just seems like a very, very dead period in which Memorial Day is over. So supposedly baseball is now coming into full effect. And it's the first marker in the baseball season, which has been delineated somehow as the first marker. Unfortunately, it really isn't the first marker at all, because last year all the teams that were in first place at Memorial Day were not in first place at the end of the year. So who knows what the what baseball will bring. What's interesting that I'd like to ask your opinion on is how Steinbrenner said today, which I was very intrigued by, is that A-Rod is not living up to expectations.
No beep. No diggity?
No doubt.
That's not exactly, groundbreaking news. His income is larger than the GDP of small countries, and he hasn't played an inning yet, and outside of his run in 2009, hasn't been close to worthy of the contract. Now, it never should have been offered. What he did was insane. Announcing after the fourth game of the World Series was classless. And, the Yankees were the only team to make the only team that made that offer. The offer that the contract he had originally was perfectly fair. I mean, you know this better than I do, but I think he was making about $20 million a year. And he was the best player in baseball, so that was relevant. That made sense. A $30 million a year contract, for all intents and purposes, for a 37-year-old third baseman with 4 years left on a contract looked insane, and we all knew that. So, the Yankees reap what they sow.
Agreed. there was something I came across last week that I was going to ask you about, and it had nothing to do with baseball, which means that you can now comment.
Why can I not comment on baseball?
Well, you could, but you could, you know what, aside from the era, okay, I'll let that go. Floyd Mayweather has a new fight.
He does.
Is this anybody that we should be paying attention to?
It's the right fight. Unfortunately, it won't matter. Canelo Alvarez he's 42-0. He's a very good fighter. It's not a fight I would pay to see. I don't think he can beat Mayweather. Right now, I don't think there's anyone at the 140, 147, 154 range that can beat Mayweather. And it's unfortunate. You know, the best of Mayweather is still phenomenal. And his best challenges over the last 10 years have all dissipated. Either they didn't happen. Most of them didn't happen. And, you know, boxing is a rare sport where record doesn't really determine whether you're the best of all time. And he will go down as a great. He will not go down as an all-time great. As the greatest ever. You know, that'll go to a Sugar Ray Robinson or a Harry Greb or a Benny Leonard or a Henry Armstrong. Or even in this generation of the Leonard or Roberto Duran or the Thomas Hearns. And they may not have the record, but they fought everybody. And nobody, with one or two pointed exceptions, and if they're listening, they knew who I'm talking to. They knew I'm talking about. You know, thinks that Mayweather fought the best possible candidates out there. So it's a good fight. It's not one I'm particularly excited to see because I don't think Alvarez can beat Mayweather.
Okay, so nobody can beat Mayweather. He's done everything that he can except for fighting Pacquiao. But Pacquiao's not in his weight class, right?
Well, Pacquiao fights at 147. Pacquiao was in his weight class.
Was as opposed to now is?
Mayweather jumps between 147 and 154. Pacquiao fights at 147. So, yeah, would have been in the same weight class.
Okay, does Mayweather, and I know we've touched upon this before because it seems like that's the only boxing we ever touch upon, but is Mayweather given a bum rap? I mean, you can only fight who's there, right? I mean,
no.
What do you mean no? You can't pull a guy out of the grave and tell him to go fight somebody.
The great thing about boxing is you can fight whoever the heck you want.
Well, but no. Wait a second. So you're going to put a guy at a disadvantage to go fight somebody else.
If you – look,
I'm looking. I'm watching.
The great,
I'm listening.
You have guys like Sugar Ray Leonard who fought the impossible fight, went up to 168, fights Donnie Lalonde, wins the championship, moves down to 160 to fight Marvin Hagler, who hadn't lost in, 13 years. Disputed decision, whether he won or lost is irrelevant. I mean, he did win the fight. I mean, he won the decision. The decision was pretty tight. You're judged in boxing almost differently than you're judged in any other sport. You're judged more by who you fight in a lot of ways than your overall record. And nobody thinks that Floyd Mayweather has fought the best fighters out there. The reason that Manny Pacquiao is so beloved and is thought of, although his record is not as good, and I'm taking out the last year where he had a loss, which was a joke, and then he got knocked out by Marquez. But Pacquiao has fought everyone. And he fought Juan Manuel Marquez three times. He fought Eric Morales, a Hall of Famer, Marco Antonio Barrera, Hall of Famer, Cotto, a Hall of Famer, knocked out Ricky Hatton, retired De La Hoya. And this is a guy who moved up from 108 pounds at the beginning of his career to be fighting at 147, beating De La Hoya at 154. You move up to take these great challenges. I think if Mayweather fought Pacquiao, I think Mayweather beats him relatively easily. But nobody has ever seen Mayweather take on a true challenge. It just hasn't happened.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. So at this point, who would you want him to face?
I don't care. There's nobody. To be honest, there's no one I really want to see him fight. A year ago, I would have liked to have seen him fight Sergio Martinez at 160. That would have been a challenge. There are a couple no-name guys at 160 who I think would have been a fight. I mean, the dream fight would have been Andre Ward, but Andre, that's a little bit too much. Andre Ward is 168 pounds, and that's too heavy. There are restraints within reason. But when he was at 130, there were guys like Joel Castanayor, Ciro Fredes, guys that he probably would have beaten. My dream fight, and you know, if Nabate Isles is listening, he knows this. My dream fight would have been Floyd Mayweather versus Shane Mosley at 135. Shane Mosley is my favorite fighter of all time. I don't know who would have won that fight.
But Shane Mosley at that point was 40 years old, right?
No, he was like 24.
Oh.
This is 10, 12 years ago. And this is when Mayweather, when Shane moved up to fight Dale Hoya, beat him twice and became the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, then moved up to 154 and lost to Vernon Forrest because it was just a bad matchup for him. And, you know, Shane, in most boxing experts' minds, and there are people who disagree whose opinions I respect, Mayweather had the talent to be the greatest of all time. Mayweather was more concerned with his record and with the business aspect, you know, fighting fights that he could win, and that's fine. But then don't ask to be considered on the all-time pantheon of greats if you're not willing to fight the best and willing to take chances to lose. And he wasn't. So you know what? He made his couple hundred million. God bless him. He'll make a couple hundred million more. You know, and he'll probably retire undefeated. Good for him. But you know, don't put your name with Benny Armstrong. Don't put your name. With Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, you didn't fight the caliber of fighters that they could, and you had the chance to, and you chose not to. That's fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will hear this once or twice more, I'm sure, over the course of the next year or two when Mayweather retires.
Or maybe he's not retiring. He's got a $200 million contract with Showtime. He's not retiring anytime soon.
I thought it was like only for two more fights.
Five more fights.
Oh, lovely. So we get to hear this five more times. Excellent.
You brought it up, not me.
I did bring it up, and aren't you proud that I brought up something relating to a sport I know absolutely nothing about?
Yeah, if you bring up soccer, I may have a heart attack and drop dead at this
point.
That's
where I was going next. That's where I was going next, because while I believe didn't we have a championship last week or something like that, or is that just every week in soccer?
No, we did. We had the biggest championship in soccer. Happened while we were playing beach volleyball. Bayern Munich, who's now the number one team in the world, beat the number two team in Germany. It was an all German European championship on a goal in the 89th minute.
So let me get this straight. Bayern Munich, who was just delineated to the second tier in England, is the best team in the world.
What are you talking about? What do you mean they were delineated to the second?
Didn't they fall back to like the second division or something?
No, that's something a little different. How this works is this. Well,
I know how it works. I'm just asking.
But then why would you think that they were? Then why do you think a German team would be delineated to the second division in England if you know how this works?
Wait, I thought that the winning team was from England.
No, the winning team, both the winning and losing team, were from Germany.
Ah, you said it was an all-European. I did not take that it was an all-German. Okay, my bad.
That's okay. So, yes, that happened. Now, luckily for Sean, there's a three-month hiatus from European soccer, so it will not be discussed.
Wait, there's no soccer for 3 months?
Well, there's like U.S. qualifying for the World Cup, and actually U.S. beat Germany on Saturday, or Sunday, I forget which, 4-3 in an extremely entertaining game.
And that doesn't count at all, right? Because that was a friendly.
Yes, that was a friendly. They're actually, U.S. is playing tonight, I believe, in a World Cup qualifier. I think it's tonight. Maybe
okay.
It's next Tuesday.
Now, the World Cup is not this year. It's next year?
Next summer.
Next summer in Rio de Janeiro, correct? So give me some prospectus on whether, A, the U.S. team has a chance of making the World Cup, B, where do they have to go to get through, or what is the process by which they have to get through to get to that point?
Wow, you're really going for the ratings with this show, boxing and soccer. The U.S. is favored to move on to the World Cup for, I think, the sixth consecutive time.
it's regional, and there's pre-regionals, and then you have, it ends up being, it's called the CONCACAF, which is Central and North America, and where there's six teams. And out of these six teams, the top three qualify, and the fourth place team goes on, plays, I believe, the fourth place team from Oceania, which is Australia, New Zealand, that area. And the winner of that qualifies for the World Cup. So the U.S., I would say, U.S., I think, is 1-1 right now in qualifying, and are probably the number two team behind Mexico in the CONCACAF division. So they should make it through.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
I'm telling you there's a chance.
Excellent. Excellent. So we'll know when, whether
there
we're in the World Cup.
There are three games in the next 3 weeks, and then I think the next tier of games is in September, something along those lines. So it takes about – it'll be over by around October, November. You'll know.
So by October, we'll know if Seth and –
we'll know if Seth,
Seth
is going to Rio de Janeiro.
Wait, only Seth? Wait a second. I'll be coming along. I'm interested in watching some soccer.
Well, you can go up to Riverbank State Park and watch
soccer.
Wow.
I just got an egg to go to Rio. Oh, well. I got to see the Fast Five. I know they're in there somewhere. Or the Fast and the Furious. I think they're stealing some other person's bank. I don't really know. But anyway, so that's next week, next year in Rio. And then the year after is the Olympics.
No,
correct? The
year after is the Women's World Cup. And
the
year after
Women's
the
World Cup, and then we and the women are going to make the World Cup because they always make the World Cup.
That is true.
Okay. So we've touched upon soccer, believe it or not, and Seth has given us a nice lesson, I guess would be a good one.
There we go.
Now, wait, the one question you didn't ask was how do you suppose we rank up there as far as right now, if you had to look at the World Cup, we're not a favorite. I mean,
we're a team that would be favored to probably get past the first round, and we would be a team that teams don't like to play against. We're a gritty underdog team, and that's why actually people who root for U.S. soccer or people who follow the U.S. soccer team are pretty, because the U.S. is very rarely underdog in anything, and soccer they are perpetually. So they would probably be favored to make it out of the first round in the round robin, and then they would play a team like a Germany or a France or a Spain or a Brazil, and that would probably be the end of their run.
Okay. So not a bad run. I mean, in the past, we've gotten that far. So we're not making the medal round, or you're not seeing us making the medal round.
No.
And I can't remember the last time we've made the medal round, if we ever have.
I want to say, I think 1950, I don't think they ever did. The closest was in 2002, where they lost to Germany on a very, very disputed handball call in late, in a game they dominated, and then lost 1-0 because of a handball that wasn't called. That was the best result that we've ever seen.
Okay.
And that was in the quarters, I believe.
Right. All right. So next year we have some soccer to look forward to. For the rest of this year, we have now golf to look forward to. Yes, I am definitely going on the – well, I know you don't want to talk about baseball.
Well, I can talk about baseball. Why can't I talk about
– okay, so tell me something. Did the Mets win their World Series last week?
They won their World Series last week.
I said their World Series last week.
And that'll be the closest to World Series they get to this decade.
Whoa, wait. This decade?
Have you seen their hitting?
Wait a second. We're in 2013.
And that's how optimistic I am for the Mets.
We're in 2013.
You're going to have two wonderful pitchers. You'll have a catcher who gets injured every week. David Wright will be 39 years old. Yes, I know that the entire Mets...
2013. Do you understand that the people that we'd be playing at the end of this decade are in middle school right now?
But they're the Mets, and they'll figure out a way to screw it up. It's like being a Jets fan. Okay, Sean is now a little bit flustered, which is always good because Sean should be flustered.
I'm flustered for one reason, because A, you just made fun of the Jets. And the reason why I'm flustered, and I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'll bring it up now. your star defensive end. Have you heard the news about your star defensive end today?
Yeah, that he's having surgery.
Right, he's having back surgery. Okay. The back surgery that Gronkowski had a couple of weeks ago, he's having today. Now, my question is, what month are we in?
June.
Okay. When did the Giants season end?
January.
Right. So the 4 or 5 months in between, now it's going to take 12 weeks for JPP to come back, which they say, oh, he'll be ready by game one. 12 weeks from today is game one. What happened to the four-month interval where they could have just backtracked this 1 month?
Are you having me try and defend the Mensa student that is Jason Pierre-Paul? What do you want me to say? It's retarded.
I just don't understand the Giants' philosophy sometimes, and this is one of them, in that let's rehab our guy so we can just make it in before the end. Like, it boggles my mind. That part boggles my mind.
Oh. I'm going through ESPN, this resident GM cornerstone draft thing. Did you look at this?
Oh, I've already done it. Yeah, I was on a chat this morning that I was looking through. So, yeah,
my guess is you followed all 4 hours of this.
No, just hour one.
So now I'm looking through this, and you know, there are a couple things that kind of crossed my mind.
How about Matt Harvey at number seven?
Number eight, that was one of them. I thought Cespedes actually at number seven was a bit shocking.
Cespedes was seven? I didn't even see that.
So pretty much what
Trout was one.
What happened?
So
So
this is what ESPN's writers do every single year, and it's great that they do this, although it's a little fictitious. It's a lot fictitious. They say, pick a play. We're going to do a draft based on the next 10 years. So who do you want if you're starting your team for the next 10 years? So a lot of things go into this, and I was listening to Jason Stark and Jim Bowden go on about this, in that you're not just looking for this year. You're not just looking for 5 years now. You're looking for the entire 10-year period and who would make your team the best team. And number one, and you're always – Jason Stark is always looking for the youngest players. And I believe he picked Buster Posey at number four, which is a good pick for him at 20. Buster Posey's 26 years old, can play a couple of positions, will probably move to first base. I mean, number one was a no-brainer, Mike Trout, to me. Number two, I believe, was Bryce Harper, which also was pretty much a no-brainer. Number three
surprised the heck out of me.
Did it?
Yeah. Now, I don't claim to be the baseball expert that you are, but to me, you have the best pitcher. Again, it's also it's a pitching versus hitting thing. I mean, Kershaw is the best pitcher outside of Justin Verlander, except he's 7 years younger and he's lefty. Would you have taken Manny Machado at number three over
yes,
Posey?
Absolutely. Manny Machado is a guy that people don't hear about a lot at all. He was the number two pick overall. He went to Baltimore. He's now playing third base. He's 20 years old and has stats that have rivaled both Trout and Bryce Harper in the first 162 games that they've played. Absolutely. It is very – he's 20. Just think about that. You're getting his years from 20 to 30. I understand that you can adore pitching and you can adore Clayton Kershaw. And trust me, the Dodgers do, and every fantasy baseball owner that has him right now adores Clayton Kershaw. But there is an inherent risk with pitchers over hitters, and that is the injury bug. You blow out an elbow. You blow out a shoulder. There is a much less of a risk when it comes to a position player. And also, Kershaw, I believe, is 25, 26 years old. Not to say that that's old, but you're getting Manny Machado at 20. I mean, now, if you keep going down that list and you get to Cespedes at 8, but more importantly, you get to Harvey at 7. I've got to tell you, last year Harvey wasn't even on this list. I'm not sure he belongs that high. I'm not even sure he belongs in the top 20 if I was starting my team today.
Oh, I'll read the list down. Let's hear your thoughts. So Trout, Harper, Machado, Posey, Clayton Kershaw, Evan Longoria. Great player, but perpetually injured. A bit of a concern?
No, because, again, the injuries that he's had are not – chronic, they're actually just ironic, to put that in perspective. And he's a third baseman, and third base is a very hard position to fill. If you go down the list, I'm sure there aren't – I think there are probably two more third basemen maybe on the entire list.
Okay. Cepedas is 7, Harvey's 8, Miggy Cabrera at 9, although they put him at third base, which is kind of funny.
But I love Cabrera. I mean, Cabrera, a Triple Crown winner. If you get down to number 20, which I believe is David Wright, and I think he was picked by Mark Simon. Is that who picked?
He is, but he's number. He went 22.
22. Mark Simon had a very interesting comment when it comes to David Wright, and I'd applaud the same to Miggy Cabrera. You know what you're getting out of these guys the next 5 years. No doubt. You're getting Hall of Fame numbers out of both of them. If they can sustain maybe 80 to 70% of that in the last 5 years, wouldn't you do that? I mean, we were talking about A-Rod and the $300 million contract, or 270 or whatever. Now, A-Rod didn't give you 5 Hall of Fame years. Well, let's say he did, and then he did 80% of that for the next 5 years. That would be worth the contract, wouldn't it? The problem is he just didn't give anything past that 1 year.
Well, going forward, Joey Votto at 10, a guy who I would have had higher, Andrew McCutchen, who is a 5-star stud, and he's only 25 years old, at 11. Giancarlo Stanton, formerly known as Mike, at 12, who's a great power hitter, but I'm not sure if there – I mean, I don't know his game as well as you do. Would you have him this high?
Yeah, Stanton's one of the probably 3 or 4 players in the major leagues that can hit 50 home runs. So, yeah. I'd absolutely have him this high. He hasn't even touched that ability yet.
Okay. Darvish, 13. Robinson Cano.
Little surprised by Darvish. In fact, I'm a lot surprised by Darvish because if you remember when Japanese players came over earlier, Hideo Nomo did the same thing the first 2 or 3 years. And then the batters kind of figured him out. So I'd be interested in what Darvish can do maybe year 4 of his, I think it's a 6-year contract.
Cano, 14. Jason Hayward, which surprised me just because he had such a terrible year last year, or in 2011, I guess, at 15. Verlander at 16. Dustin Pedroia at 17. How old is Dustin Pedroia?
I think he's 29. That actually is the biggest surprise to me. But
well, to be fair, it was also chosen by Mike Bullock, who, while you may enjoy his show, no one is ever going to call a baseball expert. Pretty sure.
Correct. But also, here's another thing that you're looking at with second baseman. I bet you there are only 2 or 3 on the entire list, if that
matters. That is true.
I mean, you have him, and we mentioned, second baseman already, or is that
Yeah, Robinson Cano.
Right, and Cano. Mm-hmm. So those are the only 2 second basemen. Position scarcity has a lot to do with this. I'm wondering if Profar is on there as well.
He is. But we'll get to that in a second.
Either second base or shortstop.
Right. Matt Kemp at 18, who if healthy, I can understand. Troy Tulowitzki, who's kind of fallen under the radar because of the injuries and because of the ineptitude that Colorado's had over the last few years. Justin Upton, Ryan Braun, David Wright at 22. Shelby Miller, who's just about the biggest prospect in baseball for St. Louis at 23. Not surprisingly taken by a pitcher, Curt Schilling. I know a personal favorite of yours, Sean. Jurickson Profar at 24, Strasburg at 25, Felix Hernandez at 26. That is a little dangerous to me because his body already seems to be kind of falling apart a little bit. Joe Mauer at 27. Now, they have Mauer as a catcher, but no one really sees Mauer as a catcher in a long term. And the problem with that is he doesn't have the power of a first baseman. So,
neither does Buster Posey. I mean, neither one of them is going to be – I mean, they're both going to be kind of Don Mattingly types, in my opinion. I mean,
I'm assuming you're talking to Don Mattingly from 1992, not the Don Mattingly from 1985.
Yeah. I'm thinking a little bit between the two of them, actually.
Okay.
I think they'll hit 20 home runs, maybe 90 RBIs. So it'd have, like, a batting average of .340.
Okay.
So a little bit of both. The surprise to me in that was one Shelby Miller, who I absolutely love, but I think that after 9 starts, you really can't put him up there the same way you can't put Matt Harvey up there. That's number one. Number two, I'll tell you right now, if Matt Kemp was healthy, he'd be in the top 5. but he's never healthy.
I was going to say, he never is.
That man, since, I believe I heard the stat today, since April of 2011, has a slugging percentage that is 152nd in the major leagues.
Jeez.
Yeah. Talk about taking a fall. Well, let's go through the rest of them quick because we got 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, 3 minutes. Andrelton Simmons, shortstop from Atlanta.
Yeah, whatever.
Jose, someone's still angry about the Braves.
No, I'm fine with it.
Jose Bautista, and to finish it up, and this is a guy I would have thought would have been higher if you were doing pitching, David Price from the Cy Young winner from Tampa.
Well, Price is hurt right now, so they're questioning whether he's another Johan Santana and whether his shoulder's going to be okay. Well, we got to wrap it up. We got about 3 minutes to go. I'll go first because mine will be very quick. Number one, well, there is only number one. You know, I mention all the time people that pass away and on the show in this five-minute period and how much they'll be missed. Newspapers are going out. The Denver Post, different newspapers are going to online only. Right now, the obituary has been written for the Pro Football Weekly, which is no longer going to be in existence after 46 years. For those people that don't remember what it's like without the internet, if you wanted football news when you didn't have the internet, it was Pro Football Weekly had basically what was a blog column. Every week you'd be able to read what was going on with your team or any other team in Pro Football Weekly. Basically the same thing as Peter Gammons used to do in the Boston Globe. They were must reads. They will be missed incredibly by me. I still read it online. The problem is, just like many other newspapers, they didn't make the transition and they couldn't afford to do it. So, arrivederci, adios to Pro Football Weekly. You will be missed.
And while we have a fond farewell to PFW, we have a good riddance to Ohio State University President Gordon G.
He got fired?
He announced his retirement.
Today?
Hey! Very rarely do you hear a standing ovation for a university president retiring. But he was about as big a donkey when it jackass. You know, a great fundraiser, raised almost $2 billion for Ohio State, but of course they have 2 billion alumni, so that doesn't really mean anything. Exactly. Starting a few years ago with his comments with the little schools, how they were the sisters of the poor, and, of course, Ohio State wouldn't play them, TCU, who I thought was the second-best team in the country that year. But, of course, Ohio State doesn't play them because, you know, God forbid. And then we have these brilliant comments about – now, anyone who knows me knows my feelings on Notre Dame football. Love them. I got my Rocket Ishmael jersey on right now. But I don't really have a problem with the religion that goes with it. However, according to Gordon, who is a Mormon, Gordon the Mormon, you just can't trust those damn Catholics. Well, that's not good. And he also talked about pretty much the intelligence level of the Southeast Conference and the University of Louisville. Well, Gordon, to be fair, yes, I understand that they may not be up to, you know, some of the intellectual schools of the Big Ten, Michigan, Northwestern. You're not hearing Ohio State's name in there. They're not exactly Stanford. It's a good school. It's a decent school. There's nothing particularly special about it on an intellectual level. You know, you came from Vanderbilt, I believe, which was actually an intellectually stimulating university. You know, you took a step back in that regard. Shut your freaking mouth. Take off your geeky little bow tie. Nobody wants to hear from you. Honestly, your comments were embarrassing, and you don't talk about what you don't know and what you do. You know, you may understand the academics better, but from a sports perspective, you sound like a donkey, and you're not going to be missed. Sean, you have any comments? There's that kind of Sean is giving the salute goodbye. So we don't know whether he was forced out or whether he was retired or some combination. The chairman of the University Board of Trustees condemned the remarks as wholly unacceptable and not presidential in nature.
It was excellent timing.
It always is.
And actually, so that's it. So until next week, Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, Blog Talk Radio, Seth and Sean, backsportspage.com. We'll be back up and better and forever, better than ever next week. Better than ever? Better forever. Whatever. Bye.